Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Writers Tribe Talk Show. I'm your host, Elsa Kerr, and today I have a wonderful guest. She is absolutely beautiful, and I know that's supposed to be besides the point, but I just have to point out the obvious, and you're going to see for yourself. Her name is Karina Pacific, and she's written a memoir called Choosing Magic, and I already love the name of this book. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks so much for coming on. So you wrote a memoir. It's called Choosing Magic, which I love the title already. I already love that. So I want to know how you chose that title, but we're going to start kind of from the beginning, if you don't mind. And tell me a little bit about what led you to writing this story.
Well, thank you for the nice compliments. And you were just as gorgeous. I wrote the memoir because from my childhood, which really entailed a lot of pain and a lot of just challenging times, how I changed my story in the elevator pitches is about a story about a fatherless girl with a broken heart who changed her story. And pretty much parentless, and how I changed that over and completely changed the story overall is by reading somebody else's story. I was a big fan of memoirs and biographies and documentaries about other people. And I ultimately found out that we all have a story and we can either choose to change it and choose the positive and add to it, or we can sort of get stuck and make friends with the dark and the negative and just get stuck in it. So I always had an innate pull to go to the positive and stay curious and look at the magic of life and help, because it was more fun. You know, it was just much more entertaining and just I was learning just by staying curious. And then I learned that I made a choice in that at some point, even through negative, down lows, we go through brain, roller coasters in our lives. As long as I chose to look at the positive and the magic of life, we'd be okay. Well, I'd be okay. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, and that resonates so much with me. I feel the same way and I react and respond the same way. And of course, we know there's so many people that don't or simply can't do that or believe that they can't do that. And they choose the negative and they choose the darkness and they get consumed by it. And, for me, and I know for you being like-minded like that, it's such a tragedy to see people do that. And I love that you wrote a book. It's like you wrote the book that you needed to read, it sounds like, from your childhood.
Funny you say that. Yeah. Because one of my best friends says, why did you write it? And I said, well, I think I needed to chronicle, like, and write the steps that I've used to change it, because there's different phases of our lives that we go through. And how did I change the first phase of my life? And then my single years, now marriage years, which is going into divorce. But like, what are those tools like in this new life? What did I use back then to overcome those challenges and stay and triumph and stay positive? So it was writing those tools and adding to it. And I thought, because I've learned so much from other people's memoirs and other people's stories, that I, hopefully you touch one person or two, but also for my daughter, who is now going to be 21 in July, since you have a little bit of story about her mother and where she comes from ultimately.
That's so important as a child. Now, I'm a daughter of immigrants from Cuba and from Germany, my grandparents and parents, and their stories, which when I was little, I wasn't that interested. It was just, they were just my grandparents and my parents. And it wasn't until I got older that I really wanted to know and understand their stories, and that you have this for your daughter, if for nothing else, really, for your daughter to know her heritage and to know you in yeah. such a different way than just mom. I think that's such a tremendous gift to give to your daughter, really. That's incredible.
Yeah. So it was multiple reasons. So I love that.
Now tell me a little bit. So you grew up, or at least part of your life, you grew up in Mexico. Tell me what it was like growing up in Mexico. What was that like for you?
Well, I grew up in a very untraditional version of the Mexican family. Mexican family, you think of the mother, father, and a lot of siblings and a lot of cousins and a lot of. And my mother was one of seven or eight. She's not a very communicative person about her life. So, and she was the only single mom and the only one that worked full time and owned her own real estate, which was why I'm in real estate now, which kind of come full circle. But because she worked so much, I was always alone. And I was always sort of fending for myself or being pawned around at different people's houses. But there was a lot of culture. There was a lot of great food and the colorful, the people. I mean, our people are very loving and inviting to your home. You come to the home and you want to feed them. So I saw a lot of that stuff, a lot of humility and gratitude. So I love what it gave me, even though it was a very lonesome, sad, and there was sexual abuse because I was alone so much. So there was a lot of healing to be done, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. I would say, like, being, somewhat poor, even though she worked very hard, it was very humble beginnings. And that makes you, to me, that brought me a lot of richness because you don't take anything for granted.
So true. And such a great lesson to take from such challenging and truly difficult and probably at times horrific experience, to be able to reflect on that and to find the beautiful moments and find the purpose of it, or create purpose out of it, really. And, sometimes that's just making things in the next phase of your life, like you said, talking about the phases of your life, not making the same mistakes or repeating the same patterns or anything like that. Yeah. And how incredibly fortunate to be able to have that kind of perspective. That's just who you are, huh? That's just exactly, like, it's natural for you to do that.
I think so. I mean, I broke a point somewhere. I'm going into my third phase or renewal of my life. And during, I think, the second phase is when I realized, I have a choice here. And that's where the choosing thing came in. And I for a long time, I was just existing through life and surviving. And then when I realized I had a choice, that's when things shifted. And that was by learning other people's stories, by seeing how they changed. Two of the stories that really kind of were fundamental in my life were during high school. And then they carried on in my 20s when I was like hit bottom, like literally on my ground, hit bottom, was the miracle worker and Annie Frank. And Frank, yes. And just like if they persevere through their own challenges, I have absolutely nothing to complain about.
You know, I think that's such an important thing. So for any of our author or aspiring author friends that might be watching this, and so many prospective authors will think and say, I'm not going to write this because it's been written before, as somebody else has already said the same things. And, and I think it's so important for aspiring writers, especially ones that are writing memoirs, really, who have a story to tell. It doesn't matter if somebody else has a similar story or has told the story. if you need to tell the story, there's someone out there that needs to read it. So, yeah. And you said earlier on too, that, you know, even if it helps one person, if one person reads your book and it changes their life and, or betters their life in some way, then that was the purpose. That was the point of writing it. And I think that's such a valuable lesson to share. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. And I'm sure you have really talented authors and writers out there. I didn't think I was a writer, and I still consider myself like, I don't know, but I didn't know how to start because I had imposter syndrome. Like, I can't write a book, and I'm not a writer. Like, I'm a realtor, a statistician. Like, I had all these excuses, and I've been talking about it for so long. And a dear friend of mine from Jersey, you get the East Coasters, they're so blunt and in your face. They're like, just stop, just write it down. I said, well, how? She says, write it in sections. Childhood, coming to America, Los Angeles. She sectionalized it for me when she broke it down. And then from there, it started opening up, and I started writing into it. And it was a terrible first manuscript. It was terrible. It was sloppy. I think I deleted it after we went through it, because it was just, but it was venting. It was letting all the stuff through the different stages. And then from there, I just kind of put it out there in the universe to kind of guide me to find the right people to help me along, to then it would be written somewhat decent and readable. People would understand it, but it also had my voice of the writing. So don't, you know, let what is it? Imposter syndrome.
You're right. Yeah,
slap it in the ass and then just, you know, kick it to the sidecar and just write it down, get down to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Best advice ever. Just do it. And I love what you said about, it's a funny thing to comment on, I guess, if you're not a writer, but I love that you said that the first draft was terrible and you deleted it and you didn't like it and all of those things. No one's first draft is ever good. And if they tell you it is, they're lying.
I would imagine.
Everybody's first draft. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole purpose of it being a first draft, right? The whole purpose is just to get the words out, just to purge the story. Yeah. And then you pretty it up after. Then you clean it all up and make it presentable. And I'm so glad that you stuck with it.
Like 20 something books. So your first drafts are never the ones, right? Right. You always have to revise it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Some of those best novels out there. I wish we could see all of the, you know, all the classics and the greatest stories, you know, that everybody knows and loves. I wish we could see those first drafts just so we can go, oh, that wasn't that great. At least not in the first page.
No, you just write it down. Even if you, just write it down.
Yeah, absolutely. Now take me back a little bit to your story. You moved, how old were you when you came to the United States?
12.
Wow.
And I was not supposed to have stayed in America. We were supposed to just come for the summer. And then through a miracle of God, who, you know, sort of where I lean to, I happened to stay in America, and it was a culture shock. It was culture shock from humble beginnings to a very affluent area in Houston, Texas, with an affluent family, from Spanish to all English, from a school all Spanish to all like a school where affluent kids with all English speaking and blonde and it was just, you know, maybe a few little sprinkles of Latinos and Blacks and what have you. So you know, it was a culture shock. It was quite interesting that it just and I think that's where I became agile. Well, I became agile and very flexible being raised by my mother, because I was pawned around. So I was never told we're going to go here, go there. I was just sort of pulled to the next thing. So I have to be flexible. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's one, if we can learn as human beings, a craft is to be flexible and just go with the flow, because you just never know what fun is going to be around the corner.
is so true. Now, because your early years, there was so much isolation and you were on your own so much, when you were immersed in this completely different culture, almost like being, well, it was a foreign land. It really was. And would you consider yourself a shy child at that time, or did you adapt quickly? Like, was it a quick change or for you?
Like from coming from Mexico to America?
Yeah, and adapting.
I think what my one, and I think you'll hear it in all of, you know, inspirational seekers and everybody, because I had to learn as a child to keep myself entertained. Well, the number one tool that I used then, I still use now, is curiosity. Mm-hmm. So I had to just stay very curious and just watch. And just kind of get a sense of the room, get a sense of the environment, get a sense of the people around, listen, what do they do, what are the trends, and just stay alert. And that really helped me in America and just watch and hear and see what the kids were doing and being adaptable. So
Yeah, that's really amazing and so impressive too. Because I'm just imagining, I'm imagining myself at 12. I was a pretty introverted child. I wasn't really shy, but I was definitely very introverted. And I'm just trying to imagine just going from, you know, everything that you know, and even if it wasn't great, but it's familiar, it's what you know, and then just a whole new life. And it's almost hard to imagine doing something so shocking at such a young age and adapting like that.
Well, I think, and I wrote in the book that when I came to America is when my life started, because even though I'm very grateful for having been raised in Mexico and very humble beginnings, it just was not my destiny. I was supposed to be here and grow, and I felt alive, and I'm still like introverted like you, and I'm very sort of behind the scenes. This whole camera situation came during COVID because I needed the exchange of human beings. And so I no longer could be behind, you know, the scenes, just like a fly on the wall. I had to get on camera and talk to people. But then I can put on the social, you know, aspect of it, but I'm like you, like just watchful and just going to see what's going on and learn from everybody, because people teach me things without even them knowing that they are teaching me.
I agree with you completely. Right. I so relate to that so much. And now you, through your book, you are teaching other people and in such a graceful way to be sharing your personal story to help other people. And I know that experience, just simply writing a book and putting it out in the universe, is it can make you feel both emboldened and empowered, but it can also make you feel very, very vulnerable, because now you've really put yourself out into the universe for people to see. And what was that feeling for you like when your book actually released and into the universe, so to speak?
Into the universe. It was very, it was a relief. I did it, I think, gracefully, because there were a lot of characters in there. I want to make sure people kind of were touched in a graceful way. I wasn't bashing anybody. And it felt good. It felt really good. I actually think that being vulnerable in the book, which there was a lot of vulnerability there, I'm completely 110% fine with it, is being vulnerable with still human beings on the everyday world that will maybe take advantage. So I've learned to, you know, which is so interesting, because, you know, I've shared so much on this out there for sale, but on the everyday world, sometimes in either work or life, when you meet new people and you share, because I'm very open, and you realize some people don't have your best interests at heart. So you realize you have to watch it, how much you share with somebody. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, how do I do that? Because I've been so open over here. So
that actually makes perfect sense. It's like, you know, it's almost a conditional giving in a way. Yeah. Like I am sharing this with you. I'm giving you this part of me. If you don't respect, if you can't treat it with care and caution, then you're not allowed to be in my life. You're not allowed to be a part of my, you know, my universe, really.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, no, I like that. That makes a lot of sense to me. Now tell me, or actually never mind me, tell everyone else, tell everyone where they can find your book and where they can find you and everything you're doing. And before you do that, actually, I'm going to stop you before I even let you answer. How rude. I want to ask you about, you are part of a nonprofit organization. It's the Richstone Family Center.
Could you tell us? Thank you for mentioning. That's so sweet.
Absolutely. No, I would love for you to be able to have an opportunity to share a little bit about that, if you would. That would be wonderful.
Sure. So being that I endured a little bit of child abuse in my early years, and I healed from it. I actually never felt, if I may touch on it. Child abuse is just so, it's so abundant. There's so many kids. There's 1 in 10 kids being abused every 10 seconds. And there, obviously, we have the issues of human trafficking, which is, it's a $1 billion business, which is another story. But when I started real estate 11 years ago, a dear friend asked me to volunteer, and it was here in Manhattan Beach, a peer-to-peer walk, and we do fundraisers. There's all kinds of fundraisers. The South Bay and Manhattan Beach, Redondo Beach, like, is a very generous town, which is so interesting, I think, why I got so into causes and fundraising. But Richstone Family Center is in Hawthorne, California. It's a neighborhood town to Manhattan Beach. And it's, Manhattan Beach is very abundant, and you have Hawthorne, which is kind of, you know, people are barely making ends meet, the big families. And Richstone focuses on the prevention and treatment of child abuse. And they do wellness treatments. They do therapy for the kiddos, or what they call their clients. They do cooking classes, all kinds of different programs. And they're very progressive in how to treat these kids and prevent. They go to the families and treat and teach them how to prevent that as well. So it was no coincidence that God sent my way this dear friend who said, I need help during this fundraiser. And I said, well, what's the fundraiser about? Well, this is what it is. Like, of course this would come to me. Mm-hmm. So then I could continue to heal the wound. But what I was going to say is that by child abuse, I always felt it wasn't my fault. It was not my shame to carry. I felt that he was just really misguided. So I think that helped me to heal that. Thanks for
As soon as I saw that, I knew that was such an important thing to
it
to
is
bring
they
up.
Do a great job. They really care for the kids. We just finished our annual gala, and there was a lot of money was raised. I think people were pent up to fund after COVID. It was the first back sort of gathering. And so, yeah, they do a good job. Thanks for mentioning it again.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know what, in, you know, such, and I don't want to say such ugly times, because there's so much good going on in the world. There's so many good things, but of course we hear about the negative and the bad so much. We're bombarded with it all the time. It's just so nice to hear about people in the world doing amazing good things, and especially for our children, who, you know, we need to be protecting more than anything else in the world. Incredible. Okay. Now I will ask you, if you don't mind sharing all of your info, where we can find you, where we can find your book and all that good stuff.
Oh, well, Amazon, choosingmagic.com. And I'm getting ready to work with my best friend, who is an amazing voiceover actress. We're going to put it on audio, which we haven't done. Where else? In my website, choosingmagic.com. And you can sort of see a little bit of more of the story. But I mean, sort of the easiest way for most of us is Amazon, right?
Beautiful.
And then, yeah. And then if you're in Los Angeles moving or something, KarinaPacific.com for real estate. All of Los Angeles, I'll do it.
I love it. That is so cool. So cool. So one last question. Any more books in the future for you?
You're so sweet. I do picture a children's book.
You do.
What's that?
I can see that happening.
Oh, thanks.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Like one, just maybe a tween. I have a 20-year-old. Mm-hmm. And it was so great to see her through every stage of her life. And the tween years seem to be, and I hear from my friends and just stories, like, it's just a challenging time, the middle school years. And you're not a little, but you're going into this stage, and just maybe a tween children's book where, you know, you're still in the background, have that little magical sort of influence in the background.
I like that. I'm going to be looking forward to that. We have some tweens or almost tweens in our family. So yeah, I'll be waiting for it.
Oh, you're sweet.
Karina, I cannot thank you enough for sharing some of your time with me and sharing your story. It's been so wonderful to meet you and hear everything that you have going on. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you for doing this. Thank you.
Absolutely. So anytime awesome. When the next book comes out, you are more than welcome to come back on and talk about that one and catch us up to date on what's going on with you. I would love that.
Oh, thank you. You're so sweet.
Absolutely. All right, guys, this has been the Writer's Tribe Talk Show with me, Elsa Kerr, and our wonderful guest, Karina Pacific. Her memoir, say that 10 times fast. Her memoir, Choosing Magic, is available on Amazon and on her website. And go check it out. We'll see you next time. Take care. Hey, family, if you're looking for the perfect gift for the reader in your life, why not check out one of my books? They're all available on Amazon and most major online book retailers, as well as elsakurt.com.